It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We call this the season of giving, and of course, that has a lot of meanings. But today, we're going to focus on gift giving. We're in the midst of Hanukkah, which has become a significant gift-giving holiday in many households. Christmas, the biggest gift-giving holiday of all, is just around the corner. And the idea of giving gifts is often very different from the reality. Today, we'll explore the history of gift giving, the place it holds in our culture. We'll find out what kinds of gifts are most appreciated, what the giver gets out of giving, and also talk about some ways to empower children to give meaningful gifts. And we want to hear from you this hour. What's the most meaningful gift you've ever received? What's the most meaningful gift you've ever given, or the most meaningful gift exchange experience? We'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Harry Lieberson. He's a history professor at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana and author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. Hello, Harry.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Now, tell me how your interest in gift giving really started as an academic pursuit.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it has to do with a kind of sense of dissatisfaction about the way historians and other academics look at society and think about how it fits together. We think about it a little too much as my interest and your interest, and there's a lot of emotional undercurrent under that, and the gift is really the language of feeling that we use that goes beneath the contracts that we make and all the other formal exchanges that we do.
And you have explored gift giving not on the familial level or among friends and coworkers that we tend to explore every year in December, but on a much larger scale, looking at cultural presence and the way that different cultures come together through gift giving. Give me a little bit of background.
There are all kinds of gifts. If you think way back in time, people bring tribute to kings and rulers. And I'll remind you and your listeners of another gift, the Trojan horse, that goes way back in time. It turned out not to be such a friendly gift, but that's part of the story too. And the more you think about it, the more you realize that whole cultures give gifts back and forth from that time all the way up to the present. I'll give you one example from now, and that is the panda. The Chinese do a tremendous amount with panda diplomacy, but then every nation at the high level still gives gifts back and forth.
Giving of gifts on that level, what do you feel is the purpose of that?
Yes. Well, I tell you, you know, even at that high level, politics is still very personal, relationships are personal, and gifts make a statement. They always do, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or, you know, great leaders and statesmen. They do something that no words can do. And so that's why we do it at all those different levels.
So it does something that no words can do. Obviously, it's often a gift of peace or to create affiliation. But you mentioned the Trojan horse earlier, so that does bring up a lot of questions. There's something more to gift giving other than, hey, I would love for you to have this, right?
That's right. So let's think about a couple of things, and one is the most basic. When we think about gifts in our society, we often think about them as just one-sided. The parent gives the child a birthday gift or a holiday gift. But really, gifts are always reciprocal. They always go back and forth. And what we're doing when we give gifts, when we receive them, is actually entering into a kind of great exchange. Gifts bind between different people or different societies, and sometimes they do that in great ways and positive ways, and sometimes they're not so great. All depends on how you want to use them.
So break it down for me. What are the different pieces of gift giving. If it's not as simple as someone giving something that someone will like,
yes.
what are the different elements?
That's right. Three parts: giving, receiving, and reciprocating, giving back. So three parts, three basic parts. And, you know, we academics can analyze this, but the fact is everybody is a good anthropologist. One fun thing to do in the classroom is to ask the students to describe bad gifts, bad wedding gifts is especially fun. And it turns out everybody understands a lot about the rules of gift giving.
Give me an example.
So if you go to a wedding, let's say that you're the ex-boyfriend of the bride, you can imagine you ask the classroom, what kinds of bad gifts could the ex-boyfriend bring? You get a whole shower of answers. Everybody understands that. Or something else. Let's say that Uncle Sam, that's a bad man name, Uncle Lou, likes to take your family out for dinner and does it on a huge scale. Your father feels uncomfortable reciprocating, but every year that's what he does. Well, it's a gift, but it's a gift that binds in a kind of unpleasant way. You know, it's sort of showy. It says, I can afford more than you can. So lots of gifts, lots of ways to give them well, and some ways of giving them not so well.
The idea of different cultures exchanging presents to create affiliation and goodwill, that strikes me that we do that on a smaller level. Is
yes.
that what gift giving in a circle of family or a circle of friends is about as well?
It is the same thing with family and friends. It's also about reciprocating, never one-sided. And I think one thing that means is, when we give, in order to give well, we have to think back and forth. We have to think, what is that other family member? Who are they? What's my relationship to them? If, you know, for some people, a skiing vacation would be a fabulous gift that they would love. But if you don't like heights or you don't like cold, maybe that's not the perfect gift for you.
Thinking about the reciprocation, with a lot of families these days, people draw names. So maybe you're just giving one gift to somebody in your family, but they're not giving a gift back to you. They're giving a gift possibly to someone else. Does that change the dynamic?
Yes. I love that. It's not what we do in my immediate family, but I think that is in its own way a great sort of expression of family solidarity. It's almost like playing a board game together or something like that. And it's done in a great spirit of fun and surprise. And surprise is something that's a wonderful feature and a regular feature of gifts.
What are some of the pitfalls of gift giving on a personal level? You mentioned somebody who gives extravagant gifts. That can be a bit of a power play. What are some of the other things that we see?
That's right. Too big, too small. Just ask children about that one. Too intimate is another one. Father-in-law to daughter-in-law or mother-in-law to son-in-law. I'll let everybody joke about that for themselves, but there are lots of ways you can do that wrong. So you have to ask, or here is another one to think about. Maybe too public, too permanent. You bring your idea of a beautiful vase as a house gift to somebody else, and they say, oh my God, every time Charity comes over, we got to remember to pull that hideous vase out.
Yeah.
So that is why for house gifts, flowers and wine are the classic gifts. They're disposable. You can thank somebody for it, and nobody has to worry about it again.
Well, we will talk more in just a moment about some of the maybe some guidelines that we can all use to give better gifts in the future and more about the meaning of this exchange. I'm talking with Harry Lieberson, history professor at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. He's author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. And coming up in just a moment, we'll also get more personal. And we want to hear your stories, too, about great gifts that have misfired, let us know. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with Harry Lieberson. He's a history professor at University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. He's also the author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. We're talking about gift giving this hour. And of course, here we are in the season of gift giving. Many of us are thinking about what to give people in our lives, people that we love. This can be a tremendous source of joy. It can also be an incredible source of stress. We want to hear your stories this hour as well. What are the most meaningful gifts you've ever received? What's the most meaningful gift exchange you've ever been a part of? What's a gift that you thought was great that misfired? Share your stories. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Harry, we were talking about some of the ways that gifts can go wrong. Let's start talking about some of the ways that gifts can go right. So is there kind of a rule of thumb when you're giving a gift to someone about what is going to make it a gift that is well received?
You know, I don't think that there is a rule of thumb, Charity, but I think thinking back and forth, what do I have to give that's special that nobody else can give, and what fits the person on the other side, what's going to be their reaction? You know, my father, when he was retired, did a lot of pottery. And one way for him to be remembered was to give that pottery to everybody in my family, to me and my sisters. And we still think of him every time we use that pottery. It was useful. We love having it in the household. So, you know, it's really that thinking back and forth, I think, that's the foundation.
Is it, do you feel more important to think about what the person who receives the gift would like, or more important to think about what unique thing you have to offer?
Well, think about that element of surprise. That's where what we have to offer comes in. And then the person on the other side. But, you know, it's sort of delicate because, in a way, it's saying, here's a little expansion of who you are. Here's who we maybe think you should be. Well, that's kind of a delicate thing, isn't it? No wonder people experience a lot of stress at the holiday season. You know, it takes a lot of thought to give a good gift.
Well, and talking about the pottery and how meaningful that was, making a gift can be incredibly meaningful on both sides because it's such an act of love to make something for someone. But speaking from personal experience, I'm a very busy woman. And when I decide that I want to make a gift, that really adds a tremendous amount of stress and kind of sucks some of the joy out of the holiday season, even though I'm making something that I value and I hope the other person will really value too.
That is a wonderful statement and a frank statement, and maybe when we say something is a labor of love, that's what we mean. It takes a lot of work. I think thinking early is a good thing to do instead of waiting till the last minute. You know, sort of letting it run through your mind, talking to your significant other, to your partner about it. That can help take some of the stress out of it.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a number of people who want to share their stories with us today, and you can join the conversation too. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Sue is on the line from Pleasant Hill. Hello, Sue.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us your story.
Well, I purchased through a charitable organization a small house for the whole family as a donation in another country, and they're called Yurt, Y-U-R-T, a little house, and everybody was just amazed. You know, this little house for a family, and the charitable organization will provide cards that describe the gift, and it was just really uplifting to give something like that. I've purchased the animal stocks before,
right?
Through things like Heifer Project and World Vision, but this was the biggest thing I ever bought. But it was for everybody, you know, all the nieces and nephews and my folks, and it was just they were very stunned. It was. I think it was a great gift.
Oh, wonderful. So it was a really powerful experience. Were you nervous at all about it? Because, of course, when you're giving something like that, you're not actually giving a gift to the people. You're giving, you know,
something tangible.
Right. But you're giving something to someone else in their name. But did that make you nervous at all?
No, because I think our family kind of agrees that we don't need one more thing. And that's why a lot of gift giving is difficult, because we don't really need anything. And so doing this was fun. And I actually this year celebrated Christmas in July by printing a small book of all my grandfather's emails. He lived to be almost 101. And I called it Christmas in July, and it was bound with his picture on the cover. And we gave him a computer when he was 95, and he was very savvy with it and could do the stories and history. And I bound that and mailed it in red envelopes with Christmas cards and stickers and wrapped them up and mailed it to all the nieces and nephews, my parents, my siblings, my children. And it was just amazing. I mean, people just love reading those stories and that history.
Oh, Sue, that's wonderful.
So I think, you know, you want to get something that is meaningful and like the pottery. I love that. I have a sister who's a potter. And every time you touch it, you think of that person. And, you know, those things are very, very nice.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Harry, did you want to respond?
Yes. Sue is a great giver of gifts. I loved hearing those stories. And she brings up one important thing, and that is that gifts bind generations across time. That story about, you know, putting together the father's emails and doing that so carefully, that is a gift that will last over time, really through the generations. So that's another dimension of gift giving for us to think about here.
I think also when someone like Sue is so very good at giving a gift that can be so meaningful, we talked about reciprocation. It can be hard to give something that meaningful back.
That's right. That's right. And that's where it's not about the money. It's really about the thought, isn't it? So there's another thing, and that is also impersonal gift giving, philanthropy. You know, we don't get something back in the same way. We connect ourselves to the world and get a sense of satisfaction out of that. And that's also clearly very important to all of us.
Let's go to the phones again. Sonia is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Sonia.
Hello. Sorry.
That's okay.
Can your guest say something about wedding showers and wedding gifts? It used to be that wedding showers were for small, fun, or specific, or designated, or whatever gifts. And the wedding gift was something larger, but I've been to showers where the wedding gifts are given at the shower, which is disconcerting.
Yes. I think, you know, one thing that we have to be aware of is that a lot of traditional rules are gone. We're sort of on our own. And that means that we have to think local. Who are the people involved? What can we expect from them? Instead of relying on the rules from our parents or grandparents' time. So in that sense, you know, maybe one asks around a little bit about what's coming up at the shower or what's coming up at the wedding. You know, really a little conversation within the community can help there.
Sonia, thank you so much for that question. And I think, again, in a situation like a wedding or a wedding shower, there's not a reciprocal gift that is going to be received. But how big a gift do you give to someone when they get married? That's a difficult question for a lot of people.
You know, Charity, that's where I think thinking about the back and forth is helpful. You think back, well, how much have people given in our family over the past 10 years for these gifts? And can we sort of hit that number roughly, not higher, not lower? Or maybe if you're an older member of the family, you give a little more. A younger member of the family, you give a little less. But you think of yourself as part of that community. You know, this brings up one other thing, and that is money. And gifts, and people differ about that. But I think it's helpful to remember that people in traditional societies often give money as gifts. I know that in China, money is a very acceptable form of gift for family occasions. So it all depends on where you are. Really, think local is a good rule of thumb there.
You know, also with weddings, people register for what they want. And even during, you know, birthdays and holidays, people will make a list of what they want. And a long time ago, I didn't ever really want to give anybody anything on their list because I loved that element of surprise and thinking of what I thought was just the perfect thing. And then I got older and I really like to get the things that are on my list. So how do you find that balance?
Yes. I think the registries are great, especially for something like a wedding where people are trying to set up a household. And it's a very practical thing, and it's a little bit like being in a housewarming on the prairie or something like that, where we both are. Everybody is working together to help this young couple set themselves up in their house.
I want to bring Monica Marcy into the conversation. She's Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Monica.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, we're talking about gift giving today. Also with me, Harry Lieberson, History Professor at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. And I want to get both of you to share your perspective. And Monica, let's start with you. What do you think the experience of giving a gift can do for someone?
Well, I think it can give a person a sense of identity in terms of what they choose as a gift can let other people know how they feel about themselves as a person. So I'm thinking of children, and the experience of children giving gifts can show that they love the person that they give the gift to, or that they are able to take that other person's perspective. So I think that it can give them a sense of self-confidence in choosing something that someone else would like.
Do you think, and focusing on children, and Harry, I'll get your response too on maybe a bigger scale of ages too, but Monica, in facilitating children to give a gift, I mean, in our culture, often we give to children, and we don't expect children to give to us or necessarily to each other. Is that an empowering experience for a child?
The fact that we give them gifts,
or giving them an opportunity to give a present, is that empowering?
Yes, I think so, because it can teach them empathy and the ability to take another person's desires into account other than their own. So I think it can be a valuable way to teach children how to think about other people's wishes, which is not always easy for very young children to do. So it can facilitate that empathy development and that development of, that what they call theory of mind. So the ability to think about another person's wants and needs.
At what developmental stage does that become possible for a kid? I mean, we think about maybe before children turn 3, although we encourage them to share, the idea of sharing doesn't really become real until they're about at that stage. At what point can kids usually start having that theory of mind and think, hey, you know, I love mom and mom loves these things. I would like to give her something that she loves.
Well, it's typically developed at about 5 or 6 years old, but you can see some of the preceding developmental skills before that. Even as early as infancy, you can see empathy for other people. So when babies hear other babies cry, they may start crying themselves. Or when kids, you know, see someone hurt or upset, they may start to feel upset themselves in terms of, you know, understanding that that other person has an emotion that is different from mine. That's a little bit of a higher level skill. So I would say about 5 or 6 is when they can really start to take that into account. And I think the research would back that up.
We're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Monica Marcy, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University, and Harry Lieberson, History Professor at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. He's also author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. We would love for you to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about gift giving this hour. We've explored some of the history of gift giving, the place it holds in our culture, some of the ways to make sure your gifts are a little more successful than perhaps some other gifts. And we're talking about the power of gift giving right now. With me is Monica Marcy. She's Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Also, Harry Lieberson, History Professor at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. We also want to hear your stories this hour of maybe the most meaningful gift you've ever received, the most meaningful gift you've ever given, a way that you facilitate meaningful gift giving in your family, maybe a great way to take the stress out of gift giving. Share your stories. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before the break, we were talking about what giving a gift does for the giver. We were focusing on kids. And Harry, I'd like to hear your thoughts on people in general.
Yes. If it's okay with you, I'll go back to kids because that's a great subject. And I learned a lot by listening to Monica. It is empowering for children to give gifts. That is one of the ways that they can make their path to independence. And that's an exciting thing for them to do. And it can be something simple. It can be the pencil holder they made in shop. It can be a painting they made in school. And those are things, they don't cost money. They can give them to a parent. Giving gifts also teaches children about the rhythm of giving and receiving. And that's a hard lesson that takes time, that they get gifts at their birthday. They give gifts for other people's birthdays. They have to grow with that over a period of years, really. But the great thing is that by the time they are young adults graduating from high school or in college, it can be huge fun in a family that everybody takes part in the spirit of giving and receiving, and something that really helps to bind the family together over time.
Now, there are a lot of different ways you can facilitate your child giving a gift. Monica, you know, I know people who will give their child, here's $20, go buy something for your mom, or you know, here's $20, go buy something for your friend for their birthday. There are people who ask their children to make presents or try to get them the supplies to make a present or make a present with them. Do we know anything about what works better? And of course, you know, some kids have to spend their own money on gifts, which also can be a valuable lesson. Do we have a way that seems to be the most effective, Monica?
Well, I wouldn't say generally across the board we know what would be more effective. I think that kids do get more satisfaction out of choosing the gift, so having you know, taking part in choosing it or making it, because that kind of forces them to think about what the other person likes and wants, and that may be very different than what they like and want. So I think that if they can have a part in choosing the gift, then they will have more ownership in it, and it will teach them skills of so noticing social cues in other people when they express preferences for what they like and dislike. So I think that we can, you know, we can teach our kids how to do that, and that way they can choose better gifts. I do know there's some research that shows that little girls tend to be more involved in picking out and wrapping gifts for other people than little boys do. So I think that has to do with something about how we socialize our kids. and we may take our girls shopping more often. So there's just some research that shows that girls enjoy that more than boys do.
In your own personal experience, I know that you have two kids, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you have your daughter's 4, your son is 7. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you've done that you felt really worked well?
I've had them make a lot of gifts. They do really enjoy that because they feel very proud. If we go to a birthday party, they always make a special card that goes with the present. So even if they couldn't pick out the gift, they have a personal touch that they add to it, and they're very proud of it. So they'll take it out and show it to the other child, and it just gives them more. I think it makes them more a part of it, to where they feel like they have had something to do with the choosing of the gift, even if they didn't actually go shopping for it. So I think making gifts works really well. Like you said, my son does want to spend his own money on gifts now, and I think he seems to have no hesitation in doing that. So I plan on having him help pick out things and spend his own money on that. I think that's good once they can start saving money and realizing, what certain things cost and what the value of things are, then that can also teach them, to be more involved and thoughtful.
Absolutely. And if it costs a child something, whether it's effort or money or giving someone else a present that they'd really like to keep themselves, I mean, that seems to be maybe an important part of the exchange.
Yes, that's right. Because like I said, it helps them to take ownership in the gift. Little kids can't necessarily, 3 or 4 year olds, they can't necessarily realize that a gift that they would like may not be appropriate for someone else. So we can help teach them that by, having them start to develop those perspective taking skills by saying, what do you think your mom would like, and then having them, brainstorm, well, what does she typically wear every day, or what does she like to eat? Or so it kind of helps them to figure out, well, even though I don't like this certain thing, my mom might like it. So I think that we can, that we can encourage them early on to really be involved so that the gift is not empty and it's more meaningful.
Right. Now, Harry, as an adult, you mentioned earlier, you used the phrase, it's the thought that counts when somebody has invested time and energy in selecting a present.
Yes.
And I love to give presents and I love to invest a lot of time in it, even when it is stressful and difficult. So often these days, we see people exchanging gift cards. I don't like to get gift cards usually because I feel like unless there's something specific that somebody knew about me, that I needed something, it feels like a gift without a lot of thought. How do you feel about that change in our culture? Because gift cards are hugely popular now.
That's right. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. There are people who love getting them. They have a favorite store and they can go right to that store or something like that. Sometimes we know that somebody is very busy, but it's a thought that counts. They gave us a gift card because that's what they could do. Another way of simplifying is if you have a gift that everybody sort of knows and loves. For example, if you travel a lot, maybe you can pick up T-shirts wherever you go for your kid or your nephew, and they love those T-shirts. They get a collection of T-shirts that way. That kind of thing, maybe that's for busy people. Maybe that's a good way to go that everybody likes.
What do you think about gift cards and that kind of giving, Monica?
I think that he's right that it can be more impersonal, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It can also be a preference. I remember when my grandparents had their 50th wedding anniversary and they live far away from me, and I went to the party with a beautiful vase that I thought was beautiful, and everyone else in the family had gotten them gift cards. So I felt very out of place because they wanted the gift cards. They asked for them, and I didn't know that. So I think it depends.
Yeah.
So that was my experience with the gift card.
That seems to be the moral of the story is it depends all the time.
True.
With every different family situation. I want to get back to the phones. Laura's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi. And you found a way in your family to take the stress out of gift giving. What do you do?
Yeah, we as our family grew, we went from everybody giving everybody gifts to drawing names, and still found that as we got to three generations, and you might have drawn the name of a niece that you see once a year or a brother-in-law that you don't know really well, and so the gifts were stressful and sometimes really missed the mark. And then one of my sisters hit upon a dice game. So that the gift giving becomes a game every year. Everyone brings one present to the family gathering, which is now more than 20 adults, and goes in the center, and you roll the dice, and you have to roll doubles, I think, or there's some rule. And by the time you go around two or three times, and then finally everyone has gotten to take one gift from the stack, as it were. And then the dice game turns to, if you roll certain combinations, you get to go steal somebody else's gift. And they've become unwrapped in this process. So now you see what they are.
Right, right.
And the funniest thing is that there's one year in which people were fighting, as it were, going back and forth over silly things like a bag of popcorn. Or a ridiculous, I can't even remember all the silly things, but they aren't always white elephants. But
so for your family, it's really become the interaction, the enjoyment of playing a game together. And Laura, we're nearly out of time, but thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And Harry, I would love to hear your take on that, because obviously the holidays, gift-giving opportunities are supposed to be about bringing people together.
Yes, that is a wonderful example of the spirit of a family over time. And they just have a certain way of doing things that comes out so well in that story. Other families may do things differently. They may want to have individualized gifts, but that's a great example of finding your own way with the gift giving. I do think it's important for people to figure out how to reduce stress, whatever it takes for gift giving. It should be joyful, and with a little bit of reflection, people can make it that way for their family.
Harry, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Harry Lieberson, history professor at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, author of The Return of the Gift, European History of a Global Idea. Monica Marcy, thank you.
Thank you.
Monica Marcy, associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.
Sing the love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland.